What up, listener? We wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this Blue Wire podcast. Be sure to show your support to this pod by subscribing and dropping a 5-star review on iTunes, a follow on Spotify, or the appropriate dApp for any other platform you might be listening on. And if you're enjoying this show, chances are you'll like one of our 75 other sports podcasts. Find more shows you'll love at BlueWirePods.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Blue Wire.
Three on the way! Yes! Paul George nails it!
For the win!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the next episode of the B-Ball Index podcast. I'm your host, Krangis McBasketball, but you can call me Tim. Today's pod, as always, is brought to you through Blue Wire. And continuing our series of podcasts with brilliant guests, here we have today with us Nathan Walker. Nathan has been researching NBA's numbers for over 10 years. He specializes in luck and variance adjustments, team win projections, all-in-one player stats, and trying to simplify basketball concepts into single stats, which we can identify with at B-Ball Index. If you don't know Nathan, Nathan's also the creator of SPR, which we'll talk about in a bit. He's done some really foundational work around luck adjustments and has also created his own predictive win percentages, which I want to ask about later. Nathan is also a member of NBA Twitter and, more impressively, an AI analyst at Stats. So, Nathan, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, super excited to have you on. We've had Costa on last week. He was talking to us about Darko. We had a coach friend of ours, KJ Smith, come on last week, talk about how he uses stats as a coach. Really interested to get your perspective, and especially as somebody who works for, you know, stats as an AI analyst, and have done some really great work in the NBA Twitter sphere. So,
sure.
Where would you like to start? I'd love to talk about SPR.
Sure. Let's do it.
All right. Awesome. So I guess the first question is, what does SPR stand for and what does it tell us?
So the stat itself that I'm kind of monetizing on my Patreon is called Stable SPR. It's not the – doesn't quite roll off the tongue like SPR does. But long ago – I created a stat called SPR, which just literally stands for simple player rating. I was trying to look for a simpler way to kind of model a player RAPM, which is basically your adjusted plus minus, adjusted for your teammates and opponents on the floor. And so I was trying to find a simpler way of doing it than something like box plus minus. And I found a way to do it and get roughly the same results. Fast forward, I still use the name SPR. It's not quite as simple anymore. But the exciting thing that I developed over the summer was the ability to kind of luck adjust and stabilize individual box score stats before kind of summing them all together to get a picture of a player's overall value for that season.
That's really interesting. And when you talk about, you know, maybe missed opportunities with things flowing off the tongue. We have PIPM. We could have had PIMP. We're at BS Basketball Index, which maybe have been the right move.
Yeah, I'm okay with PIPM. It feels safer.
I feel like someone like 538 might have made sure it was a word just like Draymond and Raptor and all theirs. But so with Stable SPR, what are some of the inputs that go into that? Is this box score? Is this player tracking data, synergy data? Is this, on-off, play-by-play stuff? What are some of, like, the basic inputs? You don't need to reveal all the secrets, but what goes into coming up with that math?
Sure. So, as was part of its name when I first developed it, that it would be a simple player rating, it just uses box score information. So it's not quite as detailed as the PIPMs, the RPMs, the Raptors of the world. But that being said, we can do some pretty cool things with it because it's a box score rating. All the inputs are literally just your typical blocks, steals, points, rebounds, everything. And then each of those is assigned a value, as is the case in most of these systems, you know, which is somewhat of a flawed assertion because obviously not all points are created equally, et cetera, et cetera. But over time, the RAPM model that it's trying to predict tends to be a pretty good representation of a player's value. So the really cool and interesting part of stable SPR is that it doesn't just take, you know, for example, blocks and multiply it by 1.5 or whatever. First, it looks at every stat and it regresses it to the mean. And so the reason that this is important is because players can get unusually hot or cold from in certain stats. The easiest example would be a player's three-point shooting. So let's say that, you know, in a player's first three games, they're averaging 15 points per game on 5 of 5 from 3. That's probably not as stable as, say, someone that's, you know, going 5 of 10 from the field and making, you know, 5 free throws a game. That number, you could say, okay, it's not just this guy getting unreasonably lucky from 3. And the reason that that's generally the case is because an individual shot going in, the further away the shot is obviously there's a lower probability of it, and therefore it just can vary a lot more. So all that to say, I take each of the box score stats, three-point attempts, three-point percentage, free throw attempts, everything that plugs into the model. And before I plug it into the model, I regress it to the mean by a special number. So anyone that listened to your podcast last week, I actually have not had a chance to listen to it yet. I'm really excited to listen to it because Kostya's Darko is like probably the most interesting thing in the basketball analytics world right now. But effectively what stable SPR does is a much simpler version of what Darko does, and it does it on a single season level. So whereas Darko can tell you, hey, look, you know, Brandon Ingram was doing really well at the end of the season last year, and he has a lot of these indicators like his free throw shooting that make his 3-point shooting seem he probably is a really good 3-point shooter. Stable SPR just looks at this year. And the reason that's important is because I want to, in the same vein as like box plus minus, PIPM, everything, I want to be able to look at a single season and just have a value for that season. So basically, all it does is it takes, I basically developed a model very similar to what Darko does. And it just, for each individual stat, it throws in a certain number of average possessions. So let's say that that it gave us 100. We would take the average of we would average in 100 average 3-point shooting games, basically, and then your actual number of games and your 3-point percentage in those, and combine those together. So basically, it just gives us a better idea of how long each of the individual stats takes to stabilize. And that gives us really helpful results, especially early on in the season when the sample sizes are low.
Interesting. So at the beginning of the year, you'll have, we'll just use that number 100, you'll have 100 average 3-point shooting games plus the one actual game or the two actual games.
Yeah.
If you go 5 for 5, it helps a tiny bit, but not quite as much. And then as you go throughout the season, the proportion of those regressed average games and the actual ones changes. Is that right?
Exactly, yeah. So while Darko uses every single game, I'm just using this season. But we can, it's a very easy translation, right? You can just look and see, you know, a player's doing such and such this season, that tends to reflect a little bit better in stable SPR. So for example, Steph Curry's few games he played, I think he like didn't shoot super well. But because of his high usage, stable SPR assumes like he's probably going to regress to the mean for his shooting percentage. I do think that its value comes from its ability to very early on in the season, find some trends. And so one thing I wanted to pull up was, if anyone wants to go back to my Twitter, I love doing receipts. So on December 10th, 2019, in order, basically, stable SPR went number 1, Giannis, then Luka, then AD, then Harden, then Karl Anthony Towns, then Jimmy Butler, all of whom rate currently extremely highly in all these systems. And, you know, this was like a month ago with, you know, significantly fewer games. And so even earlier on in the season, you know, it's not quite as smart. It had Paul George as the number four player after he had played 44 minutes. I guess that was his first and second game. But even still, if a player is extremely hot in their first few games, in a normal system, Paul George would have been number one by a wide, wide, wide margin. And something like box plus minus probably would have had him, you know, in the plus 20s or 25s. Stable SBR knows that, you know, there's probably some regression to the mean coming there.
Right. And I remember early in the season, even with like PIPM, we would have certain players who would rate out very, very highly. And if people asked about it, we'd say, you know, just give it some time. This will, over a larger sample size, it'll look a little bit closer to what you're expecting. Maybe guys were just hot, or for whatever reason, their team played very, very well when they were on the court for a couple games, and just give it some time. Are you saying that stable SPR would almost red flag, and not red flag, but the way it's set up, it's less susceptible to outlier performances on smaller samples like that influencing where players end up?
Exactly. Very well said. Yeah. yeah. So anyone that, you know, is crazy hot at the beginning, it'll pretty reasonably tone down that performance. Just for fun, I'm also looking at November 30th, the results, you know, pretty similar. Aaron Baines, I think, had jumped into the top 10. He's no longer there, unfortunately. But for the most part, the list is kind of pretty similar to what you'd expect. So yeah, that, I would say that's its biggest benefit, what you just described. It can kind of, it's almost like it's projecting out for the rest of the season, you know, what's this player really playing like, rather than, you know, what have they shown so far in a very small sample.
Right. And at this point in the season, since we've gotten pretty far into it, who would you say are some of the players that stand out to you in stable SPR, either being rated highly or lowly compared to the PIPMs or RPMs or Raptors of the world?
Sure. I mean, that the good part and also the bad part of the stat is that as time goes on, it starts to look more like the other stats, because its strength, right, is in the early season. So the more data we have, the more it'll look like the other ones that aren't kind of regressing to the mean. However, a lot of the names that pop up in the top, you know, are pretty similar to the names that you'd see in the box score only systems. Basically box plus minus is the most common one that people are familiar with. I actually don't know, like, I think I've been looking at my stat too much, but I actually don't know where some of these players are in, like, box plus minus or whatever. That'd probably be worth pulling up. But I, for example, I have Middleton 13th, Simmons 14th. And then there's some players that I'm regressing down a bit. Patrick Beverley, I have him regressing down a little bit. He's 28th. These are just some of the random names I'm pulling up that have some high or low regression. But again, players that have played the least amount of time are going to have the most regression. So like Blake Griffin, has a huge regression to the mean because he had a pretty rough 512 minutes played. I'm bumping him up quite a bit. And same goes for Steph Curry. but yeah, let's just pull up box plus minus while we're here. And see who the leaders are.
Yeah, I'll pull up PIPM for now. And would you? Question I would have is, if you were to cluster some of these impact metrics, some of those all-in-ones, would you put at this point in the season? I'm guessing PIPM and stable SPR would be similar because of the luck adjustment.
That's a really good question. So PIPM's luck adjustment is coming. I actually developed it. It's coming on the just the plus minus side. So it's doing kind of a similar thing, but the main place that my luck adjustments are coming from is the box score stats themselves. So there will be some similarity there, right? So like if you're crazy hot from three, I think PIPM will pick up on that because that'll have a lot of signal in your plus minus. So In that vein, I would say so. gosh, but yeah, like Raptor has so many features or so many kind of variables and data points going into it that I think early on in the season it had some pretty bizarre results. But it's calmed down a little bit, I think. Looks like Box Plus Minus has Giannis number one now. Interesting. Okay. It did have Doncic number one for a while. And then, you know,
Based on just the defensive component, maybe not being as robust.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So
I can see that kind of tricking BPM for a bit.
Right. Yeah. I think it was the whole assist times rebounds thing. Because Doncic is like, you know, an all-timer assist percentage right now.
Right.
Not as high as LeBron, of course. I have to say that since I'm talking to you. But
check that box.
Yes. let's see. Yeah, so Simmons is pretty high. Middleton. Yeah, Middleton's 27th in box plus minus. And in mine, he's 13th.
Interesting. He's 13th in BPM as well.
In what did you say? DPM?
PIPM.
Oh gosh, so many acronyms. Okay, well there you go. I guess one other thing that I should point out, I'm using obviously a different formula than Box Plus Minus. Box Plus Minus is using, you know, its own proprietary formula, has some issues. my mean regression thing has pretty much solved the Russell Westbrook issue, the one where he broke the record for the number of assists times the number of rebounds, which was never in the like training data. You know, the data had never seen a player do that, and his impact was not anywhere near as high as you'd expect from all those little effects. But I actually include that in that assist times rebound number in my formula, assists per 100 times rebounds per 100. And because of the mean regression that I have, you know, Russell Westbrook does not have he doesn't have any crazy high seasons. He's never actually been number one in any season for stable SPR. So that's kind of one of the benefits. I also have the model actually separately tracks bench players and non-bench players. I think in the future I'd like to make some slight adjustments to that. So like a bench player that plays at the end of the games, like in Iguodala, might not be rated the same as a bench player on a normal team. But effectively what I've seen over the years is that bench players play far worse competition, so their numbers get inflated, and the plus minus data reflects this.
Mm, okay. And one thing that you had mentioned earlier was that Steph Curry's, I believe you said his usage rate was so high, so stable SPR assumed that he was likely a better player than some of his small sample stats would indicate. Are there other, you know, does it treat different players differently based off of what their role is from a usage standpoint or the types of shots that they're taking?
Right. Yeah. So in Steph's case, right, it's looking at the model looks at his 3-point percentage and it looks at his 3-point attempt rate. And it converts that to his, or it regresses his 3-point attempt rate and it regresses his 3-point percentage rate. His 3-point attempt rate is 3-point attempts are very stable, right? So the number of attempts that you take, the model's just going to know that's pretty accurate. I'm going to leave it roughly as is, regress it to the mean a little bit. 3-point percentage, on the other hand, it takes a lot more data for it to stabilize. So if you're taking a lot of 3-point attempts and you're shooting 0%, the model's going to say it's going to give you a basically a break because, you know, at the very least, it's going to wait a while to stabilize. You know, maybe after 200 attempts and you are still shooting really poorly, okay, the model will kind of update to that. I'm not actually sure what he's shot at this season so far, but that's kind of the thought behind that. There are some other things related to role that go into stable SPR. And this is kind of an issue with the methodology. And that is, if you're regressing these individual stats, there are certain stats that certain players get more than others. Most notably for the issue with my system is that point guards get a lot of steals and a lot of turnovers, but steals take forever to stabilize for most players. So what that means is that players that are good at getting steals, which tend to be, you know, the guards of the world, were getting knocked way down. So basically what I do, I just have a positional adjustment. So it's actually pretty robust. A lot of positional adjustments try to adjust everyone to average. I do an adjustment that adjusts it to the average luck adjustment. So basically it just looks and sees, okay, point guards are getting luck adjusted down at this negative value. And it just kind of assumes that, okay, players that are getting more steals, more assists, that basically don't penalize players for getting more steals as quite as much if they're in a role that is probably going to get more steals, for example.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Cool.
I guess my last question.
I'm glad it makes sense.
Yeah. I guess the last thing would be, do you see any future developments or anything on your mind that you're tweaking now or waiting for the season to be over with to try to add in there? I don't know if you have like a multi-year stable SPR or trying to, I'm just spitballing things. Maybe instead of just an average player regression, use some more positional adjustments or look at a player's career history, if they've played X amount of games or seasons or minutes or whatever. How do you envision this stat progressing? Are you going to add any more S's to the name? Tell us more.
Yeah, stable SPRs, or as many S's as we can fit is my goal in life. I have like a mini to-do list. The number one biggest thing on my to-do list is something I was kind of mentioning before, and that's where the model is regressing. The model has kind of learned, you know, what three-point percentage should we regress you to? And how many three-point attempts of regression should we give you? In that example I was given before, it was like five games. It's obviously a lot more than that. It throws in a whole bunch of average, quote, three-point possessions. But the problem is that I'm regressing every single player to the exact same three-point percentage, right? So kind of like we were talking about with steals, okay, we can kind of fudge the math a little bit because we know, you know, point guards get more of such and such a stat. It becomes a little bit harder with something like three-point percentage because, you know, players of all kinds have extremely varying three-point percentages, right? So me regressing Steph Curry to the league average is really stupid because Steph Curry is not a league average three-point shooter, and we have tons and tons of data to back that up. So kind of like you're mentioning, you know, can we look at some of the past data? So I don't actually have a really good solution in mind because I'd still like to keep it kind of a single season. But I'm toying around with some ideas on how we can, basically more accurately look at a player's 3-point shooting percentage. An easy way to do it would be kind of similar to Darko, where we could throw in a player's free throw shooting, use that to help predict their 3-point percentage. So something like that I think would be really helpful. And then also some other ideas are to create like a trade adjustment version. So see which player stats are the most kind of flexible to moving to a new team, because sometimes some of these stats regress quite a bit when you switch teams. So maybe doing something like that as well is on the to-do list.
Nice. I'll be keeping an eye out for future development. So everybody that is stable SPR, you can. So where can we find stable SPR, Nathan?
Sure. So right now, I'll be tweeting. I always tweet stuff from Stable SPR at, twitter.com/BBstats. But the place where you can just have the stat, my $5 a month patrons get it at, patreon.com/BBstats. Andrew helped develop a cool little web app for me. So you can find it there, in addition to some of my other stuff.
Awesome. Cool. All right. So let's move on to one thing I'd seen recently that you've been tweeting about is the replacement on off data. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. So sadly, I broke the code since I first spat it out. And I, you know, because this is a hobby, I haven't quite had time to go back in and fix it. Just a reminder to everyone to make sure you write readable code so you can go back and fix it later. But yeah, so basically the idea between replacement on-off is an idea that Jerry Engelman, the guy who developed RPM, was kind of floating around back in the day, kind of a version of this. And also I coerced Bo. I don't want to butcher his last name right now, but Bo on NBA Twitter to develop this. But basically, when people look at on minus off data, you're losing so much context. The number one reason for that is because a starter that's on the court generally doesn't play quite as much with the bench units. That's, you know, just generally true, right? And vice versa. Bench players don't play quite as often as they do with starters than they do bench players. So what that means is that a player's on minus, off plus minus is actually really, really close to just how good is the starting lineup minus how good are the bench players. This is going to bring up a point that I just want to hammer home to anyone listening to this, that DeMar DeRozan is not a bad basketball player. Pretty much all the on-off data would always tell you that DeMar DeRozan is not a good basketball player. But DeMar DeRozan has played on teams that have some of the best bench units of all time. And the easy way that we know this is because when we look at his adjusted plus-minus, which adjusts for how good his teammates are and how good his opponents are, he's actually almost always positive. In fact, I think the last 5 years in Toronto, I think he was positive in RAPM. So all that to say, on-off plus minus is extremely flawed, and poor DDR has gotten some of the flack for that. So this is all the background. Incomes replacement plus minus. So all replacement plus minus does is it looks at the lineup when you're on the floor. So just imagine the starting lineup for your team, say starting lineup for the Rockets. And then what happens when you swap that player out from that lineup only, right? So James Harden, starting lineup, swap him out with all of his replacements. What's the difference between that starting unit lineup and the replacements, all the possible replacement lineups? And that then gives us a single value, and then we do it for every single lineup that you play in, right? So basically, this is just a broad way of trimming down the on minus off data. We delete and remove all the four-man groups that you didn't participate in. So it's only comparing apples to apples in that sense. There's still some slight complications because you could have different quality opponents. But in general, it's basically just looking at, you know, how much are you actually materially changing that lineup in particular, or your lineups in particular.
I love that idea. That's really neat. And yeah, like you said, it wouldn't quite capture what the other team is putting out there. And I don't know, maybe your five-man lineup minus you plus somebody else happens to play more bench units than you do. But that's some cool stuff. And so from that work, I guess before you broke the code, who were some of the players that stood out, rating out highly, rating out lowly? And what were some of your general takeaways from seeing the results of that work?
Sure. So the number one player when I ran it at the beginning of the month was Dennis Schroeder. His lineups are on average getting 16 points per 100 better, which is wild. Mike Scott, surprisingly, was number two. Then Jimmy Butler, then what? Harrison Barnes, and then Mark Gasol. So the important thing to note here, and I just want to throw this out before we kind of dive in, is that replacement plus minus, because of the way it trims it down, what you're really looking at is you're saying how much better are you than your primary replacement, right? So if you're just swapped, if in every single lineup the only other version of it with those four teammates is just a different guy, then you're literally just saying how much better are you than that guy. So like Mark Gasol was fifth at plus 12.7, and most of the time he was being replaced with Ibaka. So basically all the lineups with Gasol, when you swap in Ibaka, get far worse. So it's not necessarily how good are you, it's how good are you plus how bad is your replacement.
So then, and it may not be like this in every case, but so then is Serge Ibaka towards the bottom of the list?
Yep. Yeah. Pretty much at the bottom. Yeah. Yeah. So it's very symmetrical in that way.
Gotcha. Okay. That's pretty cool stuff. I'll have to check that out. Is that also in your Patreon, or do you have that?
It is on my Patreon. I'm pulling up the post about it right now just because I'm not sure who all I shared it with or if it was public or not. So, yeah, basically, I share a lot of these things I do on Twitter. I'll post stuff on Patreon if I think it's really exciting, then you know, I'll ask, you know, hey, be a member. Okay. Yeah, this one's free. So there you go. If you go to my Patreon, you can find it there. So one thing I did end up doing was regressing it to the mean a little bit, because heavy, heavy mean regression should be employed when looking at these. And in fact, a lot of players don't even get a lot of possessions where they have these kind of four-man groups that have replacements in them. So some players you won't even see show up on the list. I think Damian Lillard's weighted total number of possessions on and off was only 185. So he has a value, but I'm regressing it way hard to the mean because there's just not a lot of possessions. But number one when we regressed to the mean was actually Patty Mills. And then Giannis, and then Schroeder, and then Gasol, and then Jokic. And then at the bottom of the list was Ibaka, Bradley Beal, Jeremy Grant, Tyler Johnson, Mo Harkless, and actually Seth Curry. Yeah.
And I would guess that you would see pretty much all the starters towards the top and then their replacements below them. Were there any, I don't know if you have the, if you're able to pull the list up in front of you right now, but are there any bench players that really stand out as having, at least based on the, from this one scope, outperforming the starter lineups?
Let's pick a bench player.
Alex Caruso.
All right. Oh, for no reason at all. he actually didn't play enough minutes.
So darn. Okay.
Sorry.
How about Rajon Rondo?
I just want to. Wow. I wonder why you'd say that. Crap. Yeah, he didn't make it either. Yeah, I don't know.
The Lakers are weird. They play like they start like Avery Bradley or KCP as their point guard.
Yeah. So LeBron is 14th. So there you go. Yeah, let's see. Marcus Smart is actually really low, which is surprising. He actually has not great plus-minus stuff this year. Cody Zeller is actually really low this year. Same deal. Bismack is actually playing better than him. I don't know if anyone cares about the Hornets, but...
How about your boy PJ Washington?
Let's look. So he's positive. He's just like above average, basically. He is my boy, though.
He shows up pretty well in the stable SPR, doesn't he?
Yes. Oh, thank you for saying that. I love bringing up PJ Washington. PJ Washington is no longer number one in stable SPR among rookies. Very sadly, that was recently overtaken by Ja. But PJ is actually number two. And as far as I can tell, he's the only system that has him that highly. His plus minus, you know, his defensive metrics do not actually look very good. I think he'll probably get there eventually. But he has a lot of the tools, I think, to be good. Stable SPR usually is pretty good at picking up on good rookie performances. So, yeah, we'll see.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to check out some of that on-off stuff and hope the Lakers play more Caruso-type lineups.
Or not as without Caruso.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish there was another Lakers player I could pull up other than LeBron.
Maybe so Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee are really like their two centers that they use.
Okay. Oh man. So okay, JaVale didn't have hardly enough possessions, but Howard was actually negative when I pulled it. Pretty strongly negative.
Interesting.
That's surprising.
How about KCP Avery Bradley? That's another one that fans are arguing about who should start.
Yeah, he didn't make it. Yeah, well, the Lakers' rotations are decimating the usefulness of
that makes sense. Example. Yeah, they don't really play ball with the way that
So obviously it has, you know, some limitations, but I think it's particularly interesting. The reason I developed it is because a couple years ago a very famous podcast said James Harden should not be considered for MVP because his on minus off is bad, and the Rockets had like the best bench in the league or second bench, best bench in the league. And I'm like, stop, don't do that, please.
Do you see this as being an input for something like stable SPR, or it could be useful for a PIPM or another stat like that?
Yeah, for sure. So, if you've ever heard Ben Taylor talk about, you know, what is like impact to a team versus like your actual value on any team, this is very much skewed towards your impact on this team. So it definitely would not belong in like a how valuable is this person in a trade. It's really honed in on how impactful are you on this team in particular. That being said, I do think that it would predict, you know, possessions, which is kind of the goal here, for a lot of these. I think it would predict possessions a lot better than something like on off plus minus. So I think it'd be a great fit if it were to be productionalized to be put into something like PIPM, because there's basically just a whole bunch of added signal that you get that you it's basically kind of learning some new and important information that on off doesn't have. So it's a lot of words to say, yes, I think it would work pretty well.
Awesome. Okay. So then let's keep it rolling, because you got all kinds of stats, Nathan.
I have too many stats.
The next one I want to talk about, and I don't believe you have this on the Patreon, and I've seen you allude to it with Twitter, but talk to us a little bit about, and this might not even really be a stat, this is more of an analysis, but the idea of clutch and clutch being real and measured in data. Because I know I've heard a lot, you know what, clutch stats, they're such a small sample size, they're so noisy. Like, how do, at a player level or at a team level, what can we really get from that? So counter that argument. Where is clutch real, and how do we know?
Man, we should have kicked off with this, but then I would have gone on for too long. Okay, I'm going to ruffle some feathers. I wrote a paper, submitted it to Sloan. My abstract was approved. My paper, unfortunately, did not make the cut. For work, basically at work, I work for Stats Perform, and they let me write a paper for Sloan. and the title of my paper was The Clutch Genome, trying to not so subtly poke fun at one of my least favorite sports broadcasters. Basically trying to figure out what's actually happening in the clutch. Is there anything that we can predict in the clutch? What happens? How do players change in the clutch? And the answer is that we can predict the clutch, and we can actually predict it pretty well. Big caveat being, the one piece of information that everybody wants to be able to predict in the clutch is your shooting efficiency. And just by looking at this kind of one season at a time analysis, that kind of remains. That is certainly true. And so my analysis shows, basically, there's three parts to a player's scoring in the clutch, and that's first how much playing time you're getting. So if you're not playing in the clutch, you're not going to play. And some players, they'll play in regulation, but they won't get any time in the clutch. So we have to predict your minutes, and then we have to predict your shot attempts, basically true shooting attempts, and then we have to predict your true shooting percentage. So we unfortunately cannot predict your true shooting percentage extremely well. That is extremely variant. There's a tons of variance, tons of noise. I think that kind of holds water. I think if I was to make the stat kind of go multi-year and look at go over time, it would have a lot more information. We can predict minutes actually reasonably well. The model that I implemented was able to predict minutes in the clutch. Able to predict your shooting percentage, or excuse me, your shooting attempts in the clutch. Basically, there's a whole bunch of inputs in the model, and some really, really interesting ones. This is my very first platform ever, actually, to share about the model. Predicting minutes, we just looked at, how many minutes you played in regulation, and then your fouls in regulation, and then try and predict your clutch minutes, and we get pretty good accuracy. The R-squared in the held-out test set was like 88, or 0.88. The scoring attempt rate, so basically your true shooting attempts, got slightly lower accuracy, but some really interesting features and variables in the model. It's kind of what you'd expect, but I basically found that it almost lines up perfectly with everyone's intuition about what happens in clutch situations. So clutch, by the way, I'm using NBA.com's definition. So within 5 points in the last 5 minutes of fourth quarter or overtime. So players that are ball dominant, players that take a lot of mid-range jumpers and above the break threes, players that take a lot of free throw attempts, and then somewhat surprisingly, players that take a lot of technical fouls. So this is all just looking at regulation, non-clutch time. How does it predict the clutch? So yeah, all of these things kind of tell us like, hey, players that get a lot of assists and technical free throw trips, blah, 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 they are going to take a lot more shots. And so one of the biggest reasons for that, is that the amount of 3-point attempts you take, is relatively the same. You probably take a little bit more rate of 3-point attempts in the clutch. 2-point attempts, it's about the same. But free throw attempts skyrocket insanely high. And the obvious reason for that is, you know, you're in the bonus, you're trying to foul, you're trying to stop the game, whatever. But what's very interesting is that players that tend to take these shots tend to be the players that take more technical free throw attempts, rather than just players that are good free throw shooters, right? So think Steve Nash, not Kyle Korver. Think, you know, LeBron James, not Kyle Korver. Just, you know, so basically the players that that people assume to be clutch, and maybe your coach assumes you're clutch, and that's why they give you a technical free throw attempt, because they think that you're, you know, like a leader of the team. They tend to take a lot more attempts. So the big lead of my paper was I turned this number of how your rate increases or decreases in the clutch versus what you'd expect, because normally very low usage players take less and high usage takes more. That's extremely obvious. So we're just kind of looking at the difference between a linear expectation. So number one since 2001 was Steve Nash, then James Harden, then Kyrie Irving, then Russell Westbrook, then Damian Lillard, then Chris Paul, then LeBron James, then John Stockton, then Isaiah Thomas. And then at the very bottom, the very last place was Shaquille O'Neal. And then second last place, Dwight Howard. Then Jermaine O'Neal, Al Jefferson, Eddie Curry, Amari Stoudemire, Elton Brand, Alonzo Mourning, and Andrew Bynum. So, you know, Steve's number was, his average was 5.3. You know, there's a lot higher individual seasons. But yeah, so basically, it's just something that's never really been quantified before, as far as I can tell. And that's, you know, there's certain types of players that are just going to get a lot more looks in the clutch. And so we actually can make significantly more informed predictions about the clutch because of this. And so I do think that that's kind of an important thing, because there's still just extremely low amount of data. So there's not a whole lot of team analysis we can do. But in my testing, I was able to kind of do better than just using your regulation offensive rating to predict your clutch offensive rating. And so, yeah, we would expect a James Harden to get way more looks. But if your entire offense is predicated on Shaquille O'Neal or Dwight Howard, you might see slightly worse, well, or at least significantly fewer attempts from him. And at the very least, we know that that's true because of free throw attempts, right? Like, that just makes common sense.
Mm-hmm. And is that, do you think that's a factor just of the free throw shooting, or are there any implications from a team building standpoint around superstar players if you have a big man versus a point guard shooting guard type?
Are you asking about Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid? So yeah, I mean, that definitely came up in like a lot of conversations about this, and I do think that it's a real problem, right? If you can't create a jump shot and defenses are tightening down, and you can't get if you can't just create an open look on your own, then it's going to be very difficult for you to get any sort of scoring. The model actually is super low on even Klay Thompson and Lauri Markkanen. So basically last year, the two players in last place were actually Klay Thompson and Lowry. And that's because they did not take one of the other features in the model was your assisted versus unassisted looks. So players that get a lot more assisted looks are a lot less likely, right, to get the ball in a possession that has a lot fewer actions.
Right. Okay. So that makes a lot of sense then for those guys to be that low.
Yeah. Yep.
Interesting. So how about a guy like Andre Iguodala, who's a bench player, or I guess was for some, you know, really good Warrior teams, a bench guy that played a lot in the clutch. Is that the type of player who just, you know, going small ball, having those types of specialists, somebody that might not be reflected as well. Or I guess maybe even for him, he was higher assisted. He was more in there for defense. So maybe in a way with the type of player he was, even though from a minute standpoint, he may not be seen as well by this type of model, the error would be smaller because it wasn't a huge offensive reliance on a guy like him.
Yeah. I guess, are you asking, would the model realize that Iguodala is getting more looks in the clutch or more playing time in the clutch?
Yeah, I guess that's my question. For bench players like that, and teams that go small ball or have those Howards or Shaqs that they can't go to as much or need to take off the court even.
Right. Okay. So again, I threw everything at the wall to try and predict playing time, and the only two things that really stuck was your regulation playing time and your regulation fouls. So yeah, there's certainly going to be players that have a higher variance. A smarter and more in-depth model would create individualized ratings. So the rating here is actually called Chauncey. So it's your kind of there's a really great backronym. Apologies to 538. It's clutch attempt usage increases measured implicitly with some of the letters are not quite at the beginning of those words. Yeah, it's rough. Okay. All that to say, a better model would kind of be personalized, right? So it would take, you know, your past however many games, like how much clutch time you're playing, rather than just kind of estimating from your regulation. But my main goal was just to see, hey, can we actually learn something from regulation? Like, is something carrying over, like, or is clutch just random? So that was kind of the big push. I think that the model could kind of pick up over time, like, what's the general rotations of a clutch lineup? And an even smarter model could look and see, like, offense for defense, or, like, you know, what kinds of lineups do we want to play Marc Gasol in? Or, like, if Kevin Durant's in the game, do we want to not have Marc Gasol in? That sort of thing.
So while actual like points or shooting percentages in the clutch may be pretty unstable year to year, it's sounding like we're, through the work that you've done, now able to project who is going to be relied upon in those situations.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's basically, you know, we can at the very least look at usage and be relatively certain of it. And so you can generalize that, right? So you can say, We can roughly estimate true shooting. Again, there's very few samples, but if at the very least, you know, if you're like a defense and you know, every coach knows who's going to get the ball in the last few minutes, right? This model isn't some magical formula to tell you that. But at the very least, you know, talking about bigs and that sort of thing, like the Shaqs of the world, I think, knowing that at the very least, free throw shooting is going to be a pretty large mitigating factor. I think that might be probably the biggest takeaway. And that I don't really hear talked about a lot when people talk about clutch. People talk about, you know, these big shots, this and that. But a lot of the clutch just comes down to, like, who is getting, like, what kinds of players are getting the ball and usually what kinds of players are taking free throw attempts. Yeah, Steve Nash, that kind of player is the perfect player you want, right? Because he's going to handle the ball, and he's going to, if he gets fouled, awesome, right? Like, he's you know, arguably one of the greatest free throw shooters ever. Versus Russell Westbrook, who is fourth on the model for his average, you know, takes a lot more attempts in the clutch, and it makes sense that he would do so. But his efficiency is going to be way lower.
I see. It's almost who, if we're trusting the teams, who is perceived to be most clutch, and that's almost the way we're defining it, which I think is a cool way to look at it.
Yeah,
awesome. Yeah. So this isn't available yet. Where do you see this going? Because I know, again, you talked about this is something that you worked, you know, at work on and tried to get that Sloan paper. But where do you see the future going for clutch?
Great question. So at the very least, this model, it'd be really interesting to do something at work, maybe like marketing related, nothing really that we would implement or employ in like a production model necessarily, but maybe something we could talk about, something that's, you know, relevant insight as the NBA season goes on. I do think that, you know, at the very least, we can kind of look at a team's clutch performance and see what kinds of players are getting looks and use that as valid information. Because, again, the real thing that the model's telling us is just that usage in the clutch is actually like a repeatable thing, right? We can predict it. It's not some piece of random noise. So yeah, like the, you know, I do think that it's valuable to, for people that are building models to look and see like, the Ben Simmons is like, okay, he's not getting a lot of clutch looks. You know, same with a lot of bigs in particular. If I am going to model like a clutch scenario, or if there's like a toss up between two teams, yeah, like there might actually be something there.
I wonder if there are any implications, you threw out the word marketing, from looking at maybe some rookies or sophomores who maybe they're not the top of the pecking order on their team yet, but they have a lot of those positive indicators that might say, hey, in a year or two, this might be that kind of guy. So you as a team or you as a Nike might want to invest in this player because they're probably somebody who's going to be relied upon in the future. Is it able to do something like that looking ahead, where maybe the player isn't currently relied upon a lot in the clutch, but they profile like somebody who would?
That's a really good question. I like the way you asked that. So, man. So Donovan Mitchell, poor guy. He had... So if you just average a player's first two seasons, Donovan Mitchell has the third highest usage rate of all time. First was Joel Embiid, and second is Michael Jordan, and third was Donovan Mitchell. So, you know, Donovan Mitchell, I think he's a great player, but he's doesn't have quite nearly the tools to make his game very efficient. But however, if he were to be able to reduce that just even a normal amount and then, you know, shoot even like an average-ish efficiency in the clutch, then yeah, I think like that actually probably is a reasonable proxy for his like future clutch performance. So, you know, whether or not like that is actually super important to the team success is not necessarily the case, but I think that like, or in terms of like his growth there, right? But yeah, like, is this person going to show up in big moments? Yeah, I think just like in general, looking at rookies, clutch usage. So I mentioned his overall usage, his clutch usage was also ridiculously high, like one of the biggest jumps. But unfortunately not a super efficient shooter, his first 2 years. So I guess I would say at the very least we learn something from clutch. And the biggest thing we learn is, who's going to take the shot.
Another thing I wonder about, and it may have been beyond the scope that you were looking at, but is a player's volume of pass clutch performance in any way predictive? Not just of for what you're measuring here in terms of volume in the clutch, but does experience in those moments help predict success in future moments? And again, you've mentioned it a couple times, sample size is tiny. But if an announcer saying, oh, you know what, these guys, they've been there before, this player's been there before, they've taken their shots, do we have any signal from the data that would say that matters or would help from a, not just an event, not just a participation in the clutch, but from a success standpoint?
Gotcha. Yeah. So I'm trying not to get too nerdy here, but it's really hard for analysts to disentangle these three things from each other. The first is experience. The second is just generally getting better, because usually as players get older, they get better. And third is, I don't remember the third one, but basically it's really hard to know, like, is a player, are they just getting a lot better, or have they, like, is this because they have experience? And it's like, well, you know, sure, experience might be one of the drivers of your improvement, but it's hard to know, like, if I was to just throw your age into the model might be enough for the model to know, like, okay, like, he's better now. So, does, yeah, it's like a much broader question, right? Like, does a player all of a sudden become super wise when they hit age 26? Or, like, yeah, like, what are all the factors that go into a player's experience? So, I guess what I'm trying to say is that's a very difficult question to answer. I do think that I'm sure someone could do the analysis, and just because of the lack of sample size, it'll be really tricky to try and do that, especially if you try and pull it away from aging, right? So, like, you know, when Donovan Mitchell's 25 or 26, obviously all his stats are probably going to be better because that's just generally how players are. So, yeah, very hard question to answer.
Yeah, sorry about that. Future slow paper. No. Future slow paper. Sorry.
No.
This is awesome stuff. Hard. Really cool. Appreciate it. I love the fact that we're able to kind of break that, the news, break the seal, tell the people about Clutch. We'll be really looking forward to that. Is this something you envision being available to the public in any way?
I really hope so. We'll keep our fingers crossed there.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I think that I have gotten through berating you about questions for all of the cool things that you have worked on. Have I missed anything? Is there anything else that you want to talk about or plug that you've created before we close this up?
I guess real quick, we could just super fast talk about predictive win percentage. It's basically the team ratings. Predictive win percentage is something I built and then donated to PIPM. So there's this basic idea of luck adjustment, you know, kind of like we talked about with the box score stats. Adjusting, what I do is I adjust each team's, basically their box score output, their three-point shooting, their three-point defense, which happens to not really matter, and their free throw defense, which doesn't really happen to matter. And then their strength schedule and their win percentage, because clutch matters, don't forget. And actually using all three gives us a pretty good representation of what we expect the team's win percentage to be over time. So the main thing I try to show with that is, you know, which teams are actually kind of underperforming or overperforming where they really should be. And I also am including the fact that in this model, the model I built, win percentage actually matters quite a bit.
Let's pull it back a step to the clutch discussion. So are you saying that, I don't know, we can look at like net rating and try to predict, here's how successful we think you will be. Are you saying that once you aggregate those individual clutch performances, individual teams will be outperforming their, expected win percentage in some sort of stable way year to year based off of that player mm-hmm. makeup?
The short answer is that your win percentage above your like net rating actually does matter. And any model that's kind of designed like mine will tend to show that, which, you know, maybe red flags are going off in someone's head. You designed the model wrong. But it's been verified. I verified it with just because I thought I was crazy when I got these results. I actually emailed Danny Myers, the creator of BPM, and said, am I doing this right? And he said, yes, actually. And then I actually looked back, and Ben Morris used to write for 538. He actually did the exact same study in his Dennis Rodman piece. So all that to say, I've heard podcasters say, oh, they way overperformed their point differential. You know, they're getting lucky. And my model says that is partially true. But if you look at your expected win percentage from like your point differential and then your actual win percentage, your true value is actually kind of somewhere in the middle. Does that kind of better explain?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So there could still be some luck involved, but yeah, that difference is something that's real.
Yeah. There's certainly luck involved. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Like, I mean, I love my Hornets, but, twice Jeremy Lamb had buzzer beaters against Toronto or something. At very least that one that was insane, like half court.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're not going to – no one in their right mind is going to say, oh, yeah, they could do that again easily. So there's inherent variance, right, because it's an extremely high variance scenario. But kind of like I mentioned before with clutch, right, we can predict, you know, minutes are kind of stable there. And, you know, all the LeBron era Heatles teams that, you know, saved all their energy to the fourth quarter, that sort of thing, There's ways that are very clearly obvious that, you know, win percentage will continue. So that's baked into the model as well, in addition to the luck adjustment.
Awesome. So then let's, I guess, plug you a little bit more. So at the new site that just launched, bbstatsnba.com, which Andrew helped with some of those visualizations on there, you have team luck adjusted offensive rating, defensive ratings. And you can see, I believe it was Memphis was most overperforming, or I don't know if I want to say overperforming, but had the largest differential between their raw and luck adjusted offensive rating. Is that right?
Let's see.
I'm referencing, right, I think, a tweet I saw earlier today or maybe yesterday, and I could be wrong.
It's in a chart, and let's pull up the chart. So yeah, you can just look at their raw versus their variance adjusted. let's find Memphis.
Yeah, and then I guess my question is, tying this back to what we just talked about, does that clutch component, can we break that down, you know, offense to defense? Is it only offense? Is it is it too generic to pin down? How do we think about it?
I see. Yeah, so Memphis has the largest total variance adjustment. So all that means is that their shooting, opponent shooting, you know, 3-point percentage, turnover rate, rebounding. If we regress that to the mean, they actually are probably a much better team. And the usual culprits there are defensive 3-point percentage. As we all know, defensive 3-point percentage doesn't really carry over in the future. Another big culprit is often defensive rebounding, actually, but in the opposite direction, because defensive rating just regresses hard. It should regress, or a good predictive stat will regress it pretty hard to the mean, but defensive rebounding does not do that. Defensive rebounding is extremely stable. So basically, teams, those are the likely culprits. I don't have the full breakdown exactly for that for Memphis, but usually it is a defensive thing. So their variance adjustment puts them at, they're almost at average, right, for their net rating. So I have them at negative half a point for their point or net rating, but I think their actual is negative 2.3. So basically, their net rating, if we luck adjust it, is actually significantly better than we'd expect.
I see. Okay. Cool. So those types of charts. Tell us more about what we can find over at bbstatsnba.com. Sure.
Yeah, Andrew is awesome. Very appreciative for his work. So I would suggest that you go to my Patreon first. This is a very homegrown type thing I'm doing here. But if you go to patreon.com/bbstats and you sign up for the $5 thing, you can get the login for this website. If you go to bbstatsnba.com right now, unless you have the login, you won't be able to see it. But what you'll be able to see is these team ratings, so the luck adjustment. Luck adjusted ratings. So we've got my kind of your true expected win percentage, your luck adjusted offensive rating, and then your strength of schedule. And then we've got some really cool charts with your luck adjusted versus your actual offensive rating. And then finally we have stable SPR, which, you know, we talked about earlier, but that it's basically just a nice table where you can find all these stats. And it updates daily. So, you know, you can use it however you like.
Good stuff. Awesome. Thank you, Nathan. So everybody can go, they can find you on Twitter at BBStats. From there, they can get the link to your Patreon and find a lot of good data in there. And then if they wanted to take that and leap one step further, they can go over to BBStatsNBA.com. But you gotta hit that Patreon up first.
That's right.
Good stuff.
That's right.
Awesome. Well, really appreciate having you on the pod. Is there anything else you could possibly plug? I feel like we've covered some of the highlights, talked about the Patreon. Anything else you want to promote before we get going?
Go Hornets.
Awesome. There we go. They're a fun team. I enjoy watching them play. We've had a lot of games this year where we've gambled on them because our models either like them a lot more or a lot less than Vegas throughout different
points. Oh, interesting. Yeah, they're a very fun, bad team.
Yeah. You got to have those though. They're yep. they're fun to watch. They got some cool players.
That's right.
Awesome. So thank you, Nathan, for joining us. Again, you can find Nathan at BB Stats. Go to his Patreon, hit up the new site. Thanks again to him. Thanks again to Andrew Patton. Andrew, so this is the second guest in 2 weeks where Andrew's worked with them to help visualize some of their great data. Andrew, as you listeners may remember, has been on the pod before talking about player gravity. I'm trying to bring him back to talk about lineup gravity. And he's also a core member of our B-Ball Index college consulting team. So go, Andrew. He's on a conquest to visualize every piece of data in the NBA Twitter world. So thank you, everyone. That man's incredible. The stuff that you can visualize is just awesome. It makes it so much more fun to consume. Would highly encourage looking at the Darko and our gravity stuff and the charts he's worked out for you. So go follow Andrew, go follow Nathan. You can follow B-Ball Index on the Twitter at @the_B_Index. You can find me if you just look up Courageous McBasketball, or you can find me on Twitter at @Tim_NBA. That is all for today. Thank you for hanging with us, Nathan. I know we've kept you on for quite a bit, but this is really great stuff, and really looking forward to digging into all the different stats when we get off.
Thanks for having me.